RadioCanada.ie. Community radio as it should be.
Tous les matins de 8 à 9, du lundi au vendredi, notre programme d'infos en français en direct de Paris avec Radio France Internationale. Radio France Internationale, tous les matins de 8 à 9, du lundi au vendredi. Radio France Internationale, weekday mornings from 8 a.m.
Between the Lines, Near FM's current affairs discussion program, Sundays, 12 noon till 1. Have your views been represented? Or are there local issues that should be raised? If so, maybe you'd like to take part. Contact Sandra Ball here at the studio on 867-1016. Near FM 101.6.
Hello and welcome to Between the Lines, Near FM's weekly current affairs discussion programme. I'm Dermot Brangan. Our guests in the studio this week are Joe Murphy, businessman and community activist, Brian Green, local representative of the Socialist Party for Dublin North East, Nell Fitzpatrick, member of the Older Women's Network, and Dick O'Leary, local community activist and peace commissioner. Now, Dick, I just got a note to say that Dick can't make it, but that Martin Brady's on the way in. So, look forward to Martin joining us shortly. But I just mentioned the topics that we're going to discuss. Equity release on houses for older people. The A&E situation, or the lack of it. The privatisation of Aer Lingus. Road safety. Now, if you'd like to comment on any of our topics on today's programme, you can ring us here at the station. The number is 867-1016. That's 867-1016. Now, today we're going to begin with, well, I was going to begin with Dick O'Leary, but I'm going to start with Joe Murphy. And Joe Murphy is, as I say, a businessman and activist, and he's going to talk about the A&E situation, which I think we could pack a lunch and spend the day talking about it. Joe, I'm going to go over to you.
Thank you. First of all, what I'd like to say really is this. I'd actually like to come at the A&E situation, hopefully from a slightly different angle. An awful lot of things have been said about it, and it's been rumbling on for months and months and months now. Practically years. The thing about the accident and emergency situation in my mind really is this. It's what's not being said and what's not being done. We have, according to the Minister for Health, what she calls a national emergency. But what does this mean? Harney herself was forced to make this declaration because of pressure from health workers, the public and the media. Normally a national emergency would result in frantic measures being taken to alleviate the situation in an attempt to restore some form of normality. In any other country, that would be the case, but not here. We have been conditioned into allowing a senior politician to state the obvious and then do nothing. They'll say how difficult the problem is and then tell us it can't be sorted out overnight. But they have a 5, 10, 15-year plan to sort out what they call a national emergency, and it's not worth a light. What's not said is what the emergency plan is for now. We're not told what measures are being taken now, this minute, this week, this month. We're not told that the minister in charge is burning the midnight oil along with her thousands of staff, cronies and overpaid advisers whose sole interest is not to serve the voting public but to make as much easy money as is possible. The Irish Nurses Organisation have been insulted by the Minister for Health. I don't need to remind listeners of the worth that the nurses of this country are to all of us. If, in this day and age, some of us do manage to get into a hospital and do manage to get a hospital bed, the people who do all of the work, or the majority of the work, and all of the caring and nursing are the actual nurses. They are the ones who have, for generations, been underpaid, who work more hours than anybody else, and they are the people this week that the minister has insulted by refusing to attend their annual AGM, something that has always been in the diary, something that has always happened. She's been called a coward. As far as I'm concerned, during a time of a national emergency, her diary should have been the first thing to be cleared. This is cowardice, it's shameful, and it's breathtakingly arrogant. I'd just like to pick on one particular situation that I was made aware of this week in Beaumont Hospital. One of many, many issues that exist, which nobody is prepared to do anything about today or tomorrow or next week. It was brought to my attention that in Beaumont Hospital at the moment, they have brand new state-of-the-art equipment for the treatment of Parkinson's disease. That equipment was very, very costly, and it has been bought, and it is lying in a room in Beaumont Hospital because they do not have the human resources to operate it. And there are people in our community today who are suffering the onset of Parkinson's disease. This disease cannot be cured, but I believe it can be held in check. Now, we keep talking about the A&E and the National Health and what's wrong and how long it's going to take to resolve it. In life, there is an old Chinese proverb which says, the longest journey must first of all begin with the shortest step. Now, what I would like to see the politicians do, or the Minister for Health do, is get behind her desk and stay there. And it doesn't really matter where she starts. If she starts with what I've just highlighted about Parkinson's disease and the equipment being there and not been operated because they haven't got, start there. Start chipping away slowly but surely. Okay, we have in storage electronic voting equipment that cost 50-60 million euros. That was a mistake, that was an error of judgment, okay, and it's never ever going to be used. It's an accepted fact. All of the politicians accept that. But it's being held in storage at a cost of nearly 200,000 euro per year. I would ask the Minister for Health today to dump that equipment that is never going to be used, stop paying the storage fees, and take, as a start, that 200,000 euro and employ four equipment operators, nurses, etc., and put them into Beaumont Hospital and start operating that expensive equipment that is lying there, and start immediately bringing some help to one section of the community that is suffering. That is the type of solution that I see that can actually be done. What I'd also like to know is that why are the people accepting the situation when other countries would demand the minister step down as a result of her inaction during a time of national crisis? The media is to blame because they are too soft, no matter what they say. The opposition in the Dáil are to blame because they are too soft, no matter what they say. Ordinary people are not to blame because they live in fear on a daily basis because they are too busy surviving. How can we have an economy that is supposed to be the envy of the rest of the world, and yet in real terms, our people have never been so poor in relative terms? Who suffers most at a time like this? Who is the most vulnerable across the broad spectrum of society? The young, who we all cherish and would gladly give up our lives for, and the old, who have worked hard, cherished us, and in turn would have sacrificed anything to get us where we are today. Because of this, we should be more radical in our response to the daily tripe we have been drip-fed, and demand instant action, and not useless rhetoric about what might happen in 10 years' time. It's time to call a halt to politicians who see themselves more and more as celebrities rather than the ordinary people that they are. We put them there and trusted in them to do a job on our behalf. I want to hear a politician say that they are too busy sorting out problems and working on emergency plans instead of opening corner shops or any such waste of theirs and our time. Get to work. Prove your worth, come up with answers and not lame excuses, and perhaps then and only then will we start taking you seriously as we would like our politicians to be.
Joe, you've packed a big punch there. I'm going to throw it open to the floor, and I'm going to say, would Brian or Nell, which of you'd like to come in on that? Okay, Brian, over to you.
Yeah, Joe, excuse me, I agree with almost everything you've said. It's well put. The tone of it was put quite well. Also, I'd say the 200,000 on the storage, possibly I've read 700,000. It's a crazy situation, and it's a good suggestion that you made. I think it's down to the three P's, and not public-private partnerships. Planning. They let big multinational companies into this country, and they, you know, provide employment and people work there, they wouldn't operate without a plan. A very large multinational business plan. But our government seemed to let all the public services run without any planning whatsoever. The solution is a 10-point plan. I ask anybody in the street and even ask me what's in that plan, those 10 points. I don't know, but I do know it's not working. I think that the solution Mary Harney, the PD-led Fianna Fáil government, have is private beds for public use in private hospitals on public grounds in our public health system. Put there at half the cost of the land that they're using. And that's their solution.
At our cost.
Now, to me, that's ideology. Upfront, blatant, that's what they want to do. And that is their solution. There are beds there and idle because they can't put the decent, hard-working nurses and midwives that we saw on the TV this week onto those wards to service those wards.
Joe, would you feel Brian's line of thought there is right?
He's summed up very well exactly what I feel. I mean, it is absolutely ludicrous that we, or the people of this country, have put somebody into a position of authority and power, the Minister for Health, whose response to this national crisis is to sell off our land, hospital grounds. When you consider that property developers are paying through the nose for any piece of land that becomes available so that they can develop it for profit. And our Minister of Health, as part of the 10-point plan solution to solving the national health crisis, is to give away our land, to private organisations so that they can build private hospitals and wards for private use. Now, it's our land. The ordinary people who own that land are probably people who can't afford private insurance and therefore will never end up in a private ward. It is ludicrous. We need that land as part of the solution to the, as part of the long-term solution to the national health problem that we have in this country. The plan should be a plan for today, you know, a short, medium to long-term plan. The long-term plan should be for us ourselves as a country to develop that land and build new hospitals for the future. Because what we don't do, as Brian says, we don't plan. We have some of our hospitals are relatively new and they are overcrowded and cannot cope with the number of people that are coming through the doors. And yet many other hospitals are almost derelict and run down and are costing an absolute fortune to maintain. We should have in the pipeline now, down the road, people working on the plan to build new replacement hospitals, state-of-the-art hospitals. And what I would say to, you know, to Brian is he's absolutely right. Selling off our land, giving it away at a reduced price to private developers has got nothing to do with solving the national health problem in this country.
Okay, Joe, can I go over to Nell there? Because Nell is a member of the Older Women's Network, and Nell, you must have your finger on the pulse with a lot of what's going on here.
Well, like I agree with every word that Joe said and Brian, but said they were not about building hospitals, but they're going to build prisons. So which comes first? I mean, you know, what way are they thinking? They're both land out in North County Dublin there for a very luxurious prison, and now they're going to turn, what do you call it, down in Cork?
Spike Island.
Yeah.
So the money that's going to be involved there.
Yeah.
And there are people still queuing up, and there are people dying. There was a lady on the news the other day. She's a, I think she's a counsellor. I think she was from Cork, and she's ovarian cancer. Now she's okay, but she needs more treatment, another operation. But she can't afford it. She cannot afford private care. But she was told that if she went private, she could have it within a month.
Yeah.
But she'd have to wait at least a year.
No, her appointment is for 2008
2008.
For her suspected breast cancer and other related tissue issues.
Now, so it's live horse, you get grass.
Yeah, yes, it's absolutely. An indictment. The lady could be dead and gone. Yeah. God forbid she will be.
How dare
it's wrong.
Say that to a patient? How dare they say it? And I mean, what are we doing about it? She came on the air and she was very annoyed.
Well, I think if a professional body like the nurses, who can give their time to get a meeting together and discuss their strategy for the following year, and can ask the minister who they serve and who represents them to attend and find that she's too busy to attend, I think there is a problem there. And I think the two of you gentlemen have made the point very forcibly, and I think we can shout loud enough. Mm. And from between the lines here in Near FM to all our community and to the wider community nationwide, I think we have to be heard. I'm back to you there, Nell.
I think there's somebody else, right?
I think it's Martin.
Yeah. Go ahead, talk on.
I think... Do you want me to cover the... the subject?
If I just like to follow on from that, you know, with regards to the national health problem, we all know about the shortage of beds. We all know about the hold-ups in the accident and emergency, the... people lying on cots and corridors. And what really concerns me, again, is this. One of the things that has not been said with regards how critical the situation is, every major hospital in this country and in Great Britain and in Europe has to have a contingency plan for a major incident. Now, God forbid that a major incident should happen at all, but sadly they do. We live in a time where we've been told that the threat of international terrorism exists on a daily basis, and it's a threat that has to be taken seriously. Okay, and as I say, every major hospital in every city, almost in Europe, has contingency plans. My worry, and I haven't heard the minister even talk around this yet, is that if our accident and emergency rooms are so full up and chock-a-block on an ordinary Monday and on an ordinary Saturday night, okay, if, God forbid, a plane crashed in Dublin Airport, right, Beaumont Hospital, where we are situated, is the main hospital where any casualties would have to be brought to, okay? How in the name of sweet God would those casualties even get in the door, never mind be treated, because the corridors are full up with ordinary, everyday sick people? We live in an area where we've got a very high industrial number of companies like Cadbury's and Tato. What if, and it is only a what if, but it happens, what if there was a chemical explosion tomorrow and there was a serious number of casualties? The first port of call would have to be Beaumont Hospital. And today, as we speak, Beaumont Hospital would not be able to cater for one of those. So what I'm saying to you is this. Not only is the situation bad, not only is it critical, not only is it out of control, but God forbid if something extraordinary happened, what if, for instance, the thing that we're all worried about at the moment, bird flu, what if it did come, we're told it's on the doorstep, what if we had a pandemic bout of bird flu? Where do we put the people? We cannot look after ordinary sick people with flu and pneumonia and heart attacks. And how are we going to cope under exceptional circumstances? It's beyond me.
Okay, thanks for that, Joe. And we gave that a good airing. Martin Brady, you're very welcome to the programme. Martin Brady, TD, has obliged by coming in at short notice, and we really appreciate that. And actually, I'm going to go over to you next, if you don't mind, Martin. And what we were discussing there was the Joe Murphy was discussing the A&E situation at the moment, which we've given a very good airing to. But it was an interesting discussion. But you'll hear it in the morning if you wish to tune our way at 9 to 10. Anyway, you're going to talk on.
I think it was road safety, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, but there's no problem there.
Thanks very much for coming in. And I'll go over to you, on road safety. So, would you like to...
Well, as everybody knows, road safety is a big problem. And one of the reasons, it's not the full reason, but one of the reasons is, of course, we have four times the amount of traffic on the road that we had 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. The other reason is... I think that drink driving is still a problem, where we have people now, the whole drinking culture has changed, and instead of going to pubs, quite a lot of them go to houses, what they call free houses, and they get carry outs and that. Yesterday morning, I even witnessed a thing myself down in a new housing estate, Clon Griffin, not too far from here, down there in Dunamead, and a young fella came out in a car and smoked for about 70 miles an hour out in a housing estate. This is 11 o'clock in the morning. So the point I'm making is, you know, I've spoken, I'm on the transport committee, and we've discussed this with the Gardaí, and people said they never see guards, and there's not a sufficient amount of guards. There are more guards now than ever there were. There's over 12,000 guards, bringing up to 14,000. I remember, I suppose, 10 years ago, there was less guards, and you would see more of them. So, and I've discussed this with the Gardaí management, and Gardaí is not the problem. They say that people have to take their own civic, be responsible themselves. A guard can't, or a government member cannot sit beside everybody that's driving a car if they're not going to act responsible. I mean, getting in behind the wheel of a car when they're, you know, after drinking all night.
Yeah.
It can't be at every lamppost, and so it's very easy just to blame guards and blame. So it comes down to civic responsibilities themselves.
Well, the civic responsibility tied in with the fact that drink is Irish culture, if you like. So unfortunately, that does have to be dealt with. But would you not agree that part of the factor is that we've 300,000 on provisional license? I mean, we had two amnesties for people on two provisional license. Now, should it not have been dealt with back then, or what? What would you see as the solution looking forward, from today forward?
The solution looking forward, of course, in most countries, I know, but in Australia and some of the states, the US, in the US, if you fail your test, you're not allowed to drive a car. Here you can drive around on a provisional license, because it's one of the reasons they tell you it's a backlog. There are other people who continuously fail tests and they drive on provisional license, but I wouldn't say provisional license is the main cause. The main cause is there is a lot of bad driving. It's people speeding. Not all young people acting irresponsibly and driving in a dangerous manner. And it doesn't matter what kind of a license you have, there are people who have full license, and there are people in this country who never did tests at all who have full license, and people that have provisional licenses are better drivers than them. That's the other point.
What are you going to do about those people?
Well, what you do about them is that...
Hold on.
Martin, can I just interrupt you there? We've been talking early on about what politicians have been saying, and what we're interested in now is what's not being said, and what we'd like to know is what is going to be done about what you've just said there.
What solutions?
What plan have you got now that you can tell us?
Which aspect of it?
About people driving on the roads with no licenses, with provisional licenses, 300,000. What are you going to do about that?
Well, you will have to.
Now, I don't want to hear what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years' time.
I don't run the government myself.
You are part of the party who runs the government.
What a reasonable debate here. I didn't come
this
here
is a very
attacked.
Reasonable. Well, I'm going to attack you.
Well, you can attack away, but I won't get involved with you.
I'm afraid you're going to have to because you're a public representative. You are a public representative. And if you don't, you're doing what every other government minister and every other TD from Fianna Fáil PD does. You will not answer the real problems. And that's exactly what
we... I'm not going to sit here...
You haven't had this before from you, because we've never had a discussion before.
Joe, can we hold for a moment? What we're looking here is, we know what the situation is at present.
I didn't come here for an argy-bargy. I came here...
I'm going to give you an... If you should be coming here for an argy-bargy, because that's what you deserve, and that's what people are going to be giving you from now on.
Joe, please, just one moment.
What do you deserve?
Sorry, Joe.
I deserve answers to my questions.
Joe, I have to ask you, please.
I think I'll retreat from here because you're not coming up here.
Joe.
I came here to speak in a reasonable manner.
Well, you should expect rows because this is what you are paid for. You're a public servant.
Joe, Martin, sorry, no.
And you're taking the easy way out. You're copping out.
Joe, I'm asking you to stop, please. Take a seat. Joe, I'm asking you, please.
Well, I'd like...
Well, Martin, I'm talking. I'll address him, please.
Now, please ask him to answer the questions.
Yeah, well, okay, through the chair, just one moment. Martin, what we looked at was the background to this, and we asked what plans you reckon the government had. Now, Joe, I want you to allow the gentleman to address us.
The real problems.
One of the plans they have is to outsource the driving testing section and engage more testers to speed the process up and to get people proper licences so as when they pass the test so that they don't have provisional licences. That's one thing.
I read that in the papers, and that is actually happening, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And
the other thing is that we... speed checks on, we have speed checks. There are people driving 30 and 40 years being caught. The penalty points is a problem, I believe. So we have to have more concentration of Gardaí on the road, which they have now in the traffic corps, 500-600 new guards in that traffic corps. Okay. But there's more visibility of guards. I drove a couple of weeks ago from Dublin to Galway, and I didn't see a squad car, a guard, on that, or on the way back either.
Like, we know the system isn't perfect, so, but we're just looking at, in debate... But we're just looking for a debate where we can improve the situation or what suggestions we can make to people listening on where we could come in on that, if you wish, Brian.
I'm glad Martin has stayed. I'm not sure if he's answered the questions, but what I will say is that there's about 350 road deaths per annum. Mm-hmm. It's up about 30 this year already, and we're into the fifth month compared with the figures from last year. There's 31 extra new penalty points that are in since the 1st of April. So there are measures coming on stream, but they don't seem to be doing anything. Well, I'd ask Martin, has he considered, rather than outsourcing in the testing situation, insourcing and staffing from within? Because they've got the backs up of the testers in there who don't want it privatised. Can they bring in more testers from within?
We've had two bank holiday weekends where it was noticeable that there were over 350 arrests for drink driving. Now, they are impressive figures, no matter how you look at it. Because if people are going to be hit like that again and again, six times, and they're off the road. So we have to recognise what's there. We mightn't say it's fast enough, but we have to recognise there is things happening. Now, where can we go from beyond this? In other words, can you tell us, Martin, from the Dáil's point, from the Dáil and the party's point of view, how quick the whole lot will be implemented and what other things that might be brought in to speed up the elimination of the 300,000 on provisional licences?
Yeah, well, I reckon it could be implemented in 18 months. That's what the forecast is for it.
That's the plan for it.
Yeah. And the quicker it's implemented, the better, because it's... I think the people say, like, to make the suggestions that people, if they fail the test, they shouldn't be allowed to drive. I don't think that would be fair, totally fair either.
Well, I think after two failures, I think there should be a caution where they're instructed to go and take a half dozen lessons before they can hit the road again, as it were.
The average wait on the list is about 49 weeks. I think in Raheny it has been in the last year over 52 weeks, over a year waiting. So if you're over a year waiting and it's going to take 18 months for the plan to kick in, there's no quick solution there.
Well, no, it will take time, but it's a matter of how quick and how professional the body coming in. Would you like to have an opinion on that, Joe?
You know, road safety to me is very similar to the problems in the health, in the actual health service, insofar as no matter what the government might say, they're not taking the problem serious enough. Most, if not all, of the solutions already exist and are not in themselves and are in themselves very simple. Let's take the drink driving, which is the major problem.
Well, it is
the
biggest problem, but let's
talk about...
As Martin rightly said, it's part of our culture.
It's part of our culture, and this is the problem. Now, what we're doing is we're looking at it from the old way of looking at it. Martin talked about deployment of police, okay? At the moment, what we have in place is a deployment of the Gardaí, okay, who operate what is now called a hit and miss system of catching drink drivers. They go out, they pick a spot on a road on any given night, and they hope that a drunk driver will come along.
I know, I think that's...
No, that's not. No, that's exactly what happens. No, that's exactly what happens. What people I know want to see is this. The guards know where they will go and catch, are guaranteed to catch drink drivers coming out of pubs. Mm-hmm. But they won't do it. Now, my question is this. Why will they not do it? Because they do not want to upset the publicans. A minority of self-serving interest, people who work for profit, we all know the cozy relationship that the publicans have with the government.
Okay.
The government will be up in arms if the guards do what they want to do and catch people.
Well,
do you not think that they catch people coming out of pubs?
Joe, can I ask Martin to reply to that?
We had a meeting with the Garda Commissioner in relation to that very point. They're actually targeting pubs now. The publicans are complaining. They're targeting pubs, particularly in rural areas, sitting outside pubs. And the idea is not to harass the customers are not to harass the publican. The idea is that this is what the commissioner has actually said himself, and I quote him almost verbatim, that when people see, they want to be visible, and when people see this, they would hope that they would leave the cars there and get another means of transport home.
So
and
one
of the
hope.
Problems, one of the problems, well, I'll you have to hope that in a minute. For everything. You can't get a hammer and smash everyone. One of the problems with that, particularly in rural areas, it's very difficult to get transport at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Hackneys, a lot of them only operate, at weekends, and they're usually transit vans or whatever, and you could be 12 or 15 people in them, so you're brought all over the country to get home. So it's not convenient either, but that is happening, and the publicans are actually now starting to complain because people and customers are complaining.
Yeah.
But it is happening, and there are things being done despite, you know, what
do you
people
see,
say.
In spite of...
We can all sit around and blame everybody out there.
I know, well, that doesn't solve it. Exactly, no. Martin, you're making a good point. Joe, you made a very strong point there, but I would put it to you, Joe, that people of our age would still go to the pub in the hope that we'll just have the one or two and we'll go home. But I'm in an office with 50 to 60 people, and there's different days. They'll all come in on the bus because they're going for a drink that night. So the next generation are not That's doing right. what we did. So somebody is learning, and thank God for that.
Yeah, well,
but
I think
your point is very valid, Martin, that you just can't, you know, you've got to be sensitive.
You've got to bring to people with you.
What the locality has. No transport, no nothing. So are they mowed down on the way home in a drunk state?
Well, then, I would argue then that we are not making a serious attempt to solve the drink driving. No, listen to me for a second. We cannot hope that people will be responsible.
Who's we? Like,
hope.
Who's
what
we?
You've just said that we have to hope that people will be more responsible. You've just said that seconds ago. You've said that. We, the ordinary people of this country, who are sick and tired of people getting mowed down on the countries by drink drivers. Now, what I'm saying to you is about the hit and miss deployment of the Gardaí, okay, is this. If they want to go and catch, set out, and pinpoint a pub in different areas every night of the week, they are guaranteed to catch drink drivers. Mm-hmm. And in no time at all, people who are susceptible to having a drink and then driving will soon cotton on, because when those people are brought in mass through the courts and fined and lose their licences, they will not take their cars to the pub. And Martin, that's what they are doing at the moment. You and I and the Commissioner of Police can drive around any night of the week and pass pubs, and the car parks are full of cars, and everybody coming out of that pub, 50% at least, are going to be drunk drivers.
Okay, Joe,
now, why waste the police time standing on the road waiting for a drunk to come to them when they can go to them? Simple.
Brian, I always wondered about car parks and pubs and why they got them and why they have them and why they're so big. And I would urge county councils to refuse planning for car parks at pubs. I would also confiscate the car parks, less the number of car park spaces for the workers in the pub, and put them into playgrounds in the community.
Well, that's
confiscate the car parks. You don't need
Brian,
to
Brian, that's a very strong point.
And,
for sure.
And I'd also say
it's
that
radical,
blood,
but it's
blood,
common sense.
Level of allowed alcohol to before you can drive should be scrapped. Zero.
Okay.
Don't drink.
Well, you made two very good points there. Nell, would you like to make a comment?
Well, I find that rather draconian. You know? I don't think, Brian, with all due respect, that would really work. You know,
it wouldn't be allowed to happen, you mean? Or would it stop deaths?
Well, I think education should be given more of a light here. If people were educated to it, and why not go around to schools and educate the younger children about drink driving? I mean, they're driving at a very early age now, as we all know, and young men, and into universities. Has anybody ever thought about that?
You're quite right now, but why isn't it happened? Why are you sitting here today, after all these years, suggesting something that is so
that is happening,
obvious
actually.
And straightforward? Yeah.
Well, Martin can answer that,
that
question.
Is happening.
But that's where I would start, is education.
Can I go back to Martin to wrap
very
up on this? Martin, could I go back to you to wrap up on this? Like, you're confident that there's a good plan there, and that given time, it will be implemented and it will be seen to be effective. That's your
theory. I am, because we meet with the Commissioner and the Gardaí on a monthly basis. On the Transport Committee, and we're hammering this. I mean, the whole country's on about this. And it's unfortunate. Every week now, every weekend, you can forecast a few fatalities.
But any plan, no matter how good it is, it's going to take time to implement, and we have to respectfully suggest
that. Of course, and then you have other
things to deal with. And I can appreciate your frustration with it, you know.
It's not my frustration. It's the frustration of the country, who are sick and tired and fed up of listening to the same old rhetoric from politicians about what's happening and nothing is happening.
But, Joe, would you not agree there is a plan there now?
You know fine well what my solution is. There is short, medium to long-term plans, and we have to have an immediate plan. There are things that can be done today, and they're not being done.
Okay,
folks, and that's a failure on behalf of government.
Folks, we have to move on. Martin, is there anything else you'd like to conclude with
before
we
move on? Thanks very much, yeah.
Sincere thanks, Martin. I really appreciate your presence. Okay, we'll go into a short break here. Thanks very much.
Holidays, cars, house improvements, car and house insurance, and loans at competitive rates on a reducing balance. Just some of the services available from Coolock Artane Credit Union, your local credit union. Coolock Artane Credit Union at the Artane Roundabout opens Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday from 9.30 to 4.30 and open till 8 every Friday night. Also with Northside Shopping Centre open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Saturday from 9.30 to 4.30. With two late nights, Thursday and Friday, open till 8 p.m. Phone the Northside branch on 847-5518 or the Artane branch on 831-4660 or log on to www.coolockartanecu.ie.
Local news, local views, local points.
All your listeners will be aware that there are a lot of grandparents in Ireland who look after their grandchildren. And the reason they do that is because the parents of the grandchildren are incapable of looking after them, either because they have, you know, personal problems themselves, or they're simply too young to do it again.
As they say, you're never too old to learn, and age is just a number.
I'm trying to tell myself I'm going to get out of bed and creaking.
Local news, local views, local point. Weekday evenings at 6, weekday mornings at 10.30.
It's Mr. Hector O'Hockagon. Now the plug was broken on the kettle and your man was trying to push the bare wires into the socket. I said to him, that's awful dangerous. Tosh a shin, don cheroch. Tosh a shin, don cheroch. Blue ring, Greg and Gray Lynn. Go on. One tree lock.
Phone 867-1016, text 087-6944-500, email access at Near FM .ie. Community radio as it should be, Near FM 101.6. Welcome back to Between the Lines, Near FM's weekly discussion program on topical issues. If you'd like to comment on any of our topics or if you'd like to take part in the future, you can ring us here at 867-1016. That's 867-1016. Now, we talked about road safety earlier on and equity release. We're going to talk about equity release in a minute, but we did talk about road safety and also, of course, the A&E situation, which I think could get a lot more airing and we still wouldn't solve it, but nevertheless, that's life. We move on. So I'm going to cross now to Nell Fitzpatrick. Nell, over to you, and you're going to discuss equity release on houses for older people.
Exactly. Now, this is something that it hasn't been spoken about very much. You wake up one morning in the home that you've lived in for many years, and you look around and note with a cold eye that after so many years of service, this old house could do with a facelift. So what? Your finances are fairly limited. So what are your options? You've read about people being asset rich and cash poor. So you say to yourself, that sounds like me. You decide a possible consideration is equity release. So you find out about it and discover that there are four players in the market, such as Seniors Money, Residential Reversions Limited, Bank of Ireland and Shared Home Investment Plan, which also advertise as SHIP. There are generally two types of equity release. The first is a lifetime mortgage that you remortgage your home and the loan is not repaid until you leave the home or you die. And the second one is Home Reversions Limited, which allows you to sell part of your home to a property investment company And if you go into a nursing home or die, the proceeds are divided between the investment company and the estate of the homeowner, and that just depending on the percentage held by each. Now, another point of interest is that the rates for the over 60s are very much higher than the market rates. So much so that the financial regulator is concerned about equity release for this very reason, particularly home reversion. An example of this is that if you are a 65-year-old owner of a house worth $600,000, you can expect to get $114,691 for a 50% share of the property. If you are 75 years of age with a similar house value, you get $158,773. I don't know what you get if you're 85. That's under 25% of the value of your home. With seniors' money, if you're over 60, you can borrow 15% of the value of your home, and this percentage available rises by 1% per year to a maximum 45% at the age of 90. That's if you live long enough. And the interest rate is high at over 5% and variable, but that transaction is reversible at any time. Now, the Bank of Ireland loan mortgage is so high that by the time the owner dies, the proceeds from the sale may just about cover the cost of the amount owed. Looking at equity release, it seems to be a very complicated area to the ordinary person about to avail of it. You would need to be very familiar with all the nuts and bolts of equity release if you are considering using it. The chairman of the Conveyancing Committee of the Law Society, William B. Devine, recommends that clients are made fully aware of the facts involved and that their solicitor takes the responsibility to make sure that the client is not under any duress from family to raise money for their own purposes, generally to get on the property ladder, you know, in this emotional blackmail, you have the money here in the house, what are you doing with it? That has happened. The Law Society has spoken out against the Bank of Ireland's lifelong mortgage, which clients are expected to name the executor and beneficiary of the will, and this is surely a very private matter. Equity release does certainly provide access to funds tied up in property, but it does not come cheap. If a person is considering raising money through equity release, it is vital that all the small print is fully explained. That old house may have to do with a shot of Botox rather than a full facelift. Equity release should carry a health warning.
Now, that's very well made. Now, gentlemen, which of you would like to come in on that there? Brian, Joe?
Yeah, I'll start. I think that this is the situation that people find themselves facing and in because of a couple of factors, but that the house has become a commodity that, you know, is bought and sold on the open market for the highest price with aggressive agents who will try and raise that price a few extra thousand euro at the point of sale. If housing was not such a commodity, and it might seem crazy to think of a situation where it isn't, but let's think of it for a moment. Mm-hmm. And let's say people weren't faced with destitution in their older age because the pensions haven't performed on the crazy casino system that is world capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
People could have their state pension properly funded over a wide range of years with a growing workforce. There should be no problem funding state pensions for the older people. And if their house wasn't this kind of mecca of, you know, of a magnet to cash, if people's houses where, you know, theirs to keep with no deeds at the bank, mm-hmm. what would the need be to sell it in such a way before you die?
Yeah, point very well made. Joe,
yeah, I think
your views on this. what are you smiling at now?
The problem, I think, is this, is that banks are not what we have always been conditioned to believe that they are, friendly organisations, institutions. Banks, as I've often said in the past, in lectures and talks with young people and people going into business, banks do not, as they like to think,
or let make people think banks do not lend money, they sell money. They sell money at a price. Don't ever think that a bank is lending you money. They're selling you money. If they do give you money, it's at a price. They need to get a very good return on that, okay? And therefore, they are running a business, first and foremost. So banks are businesses, and they are extremely high-profit businesses. And the problem with that is that when a business has become used to extremely high turnover and extremely high profits, their masters will insist that those profits are maintained at all costs.
And increased.
And increased at all costs. Now, as things stand at the moment, it's well documented that, on average, most of the big four banks are turning over a profit after tax and after overheads of something in the region of 600 million. And maybe one or two aren't exactly doing that, but the one or two that aren't doing it want to do it.
A couple close to a billion as well.
And a couple close to a billion. And the problem is, with regards housing, in years gone by, you know, the people generally who want to get in on the housing market are first-time buyers who are just getting married, selling up home, and they needed to have a deposit, and they got that one way or the other. And if you didn't have a deposit from a security point of view, the banks wouldn't give you that. Okay, and there was sufficient people out there, and the property market wasn't as buoyant as it is now, so they could survive in it. But they realised that once people stopped buying the houses or couldn't get in on the market, that they had to change their tactics. They had to lower their risk values and offer people higher mortgages, which is always very, very risky. Because the problem is that at some stage or other, in every housing market, no matter if it's in this country or Britain, it's happened there a few times and it's happened all over the world, there is a danger of a property crash. And if that happens, everybody suffers in a bad way. The problem as I see it is this, is that the practice that the banks are using at the moment with older people and getting them to risk, to release the equity in their houses and as a kind of a blackmail to helping their children get a mortgage is morally corrupt. Morally corrupt, okay? It's being done because they want to maintain the profit levels. It's for no other reason. They really don't care. Now, if a property crash comes tomorrow, and they normally happen overnight, you know, we get a little bit of warning about it, all the analysts will tell us today that, no, it's not going to happen. What they will tell you is that it will happen. What they mean is that it's not going to happen now, tomorrow, or next week, but in a matter of months, or certainly within a year or 2 years, it will happen. And God forbid when it does, it will always be the latest people into the market that will suffer most. And the people who will not suffer at all, one iota, will be the banks. Because they will have had all of the money that they've gotten out of you up to the point of the property crash, and they will have your house, or in this case, your parents' house, as collateral, and they will have that, and that will be sold off, and they will be quids in. They cannot lose. I would like to, I know it sounds radical, but we live in a world now where to change, to affect any kind of change at a government level, we have to come up with radical ways of doing things, and they're not really radical, they're just ordinary things. I would like to see the government cap profits on banks. You know, we're talking here in the billions. Right? It's not necessary. It's not needed. Where is that money going to? Right? What I would also like to do is see the government legislate against banks and stop them from pillaging hard-working people by coming up with selling techniques to make them release the equity in their houses. Because in most cases, it's the only, for ordinary people, it is the only worthwhile asset that they have. And if you take that away and put it at risk, what have they got? Nothing.
Nell, back to you.
If I could come in here, Joe. Well, the human element here. I mean, parents are being really, they're really being blackmailed into doing it. Now, I know
but it's emotional blackmail.
Cases,
it's very emotional, sad, isn't it?
And it's extremely sad.
Yeah.
And you'll have, like, families kind of building up against the parents.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't you give it to her
exactly.
or to him?
Yeah.
That should not. I mean, why? How do we all get houses?
Yeah.
We say it for them. I know, and they're entirely different times. But I think that this should be like this is a new phenomenon. Hmm. Equity release. Actually, There was a survey commissioned by Seniors Money. I just saw this morning. Mm-hmm. And it was found out that 200,000 of Irish people over 60 are willing to consider releasing equity from their property. I do not believe that. Mm. I think that's
aggressive marketing.
Because we're not that type of people.
Now, if it happened in a different industry, we would be up in arms about it. It would be called rogue trading.
Yeah.
And it actually is rogue trading.
And
because
it's
an institution like a bank,
they can get away with it.
Yeah. They should not be allowed to get away with it.
They shouldn't be allowed to get away with it.
But they're talking then about you do this to supplement your income. You don't need that much money if you're that old. You don't want to be going off to a Palm Beach Island drinking champagne and glasses and all this type of thing. Or
sure, as Joe rightly said, the one comfort is you can walk down the road and into your own home.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. And the security of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the security. And there's an old Irish saying, never let the thatch go.
Mm.
And that means that you hold on to your house. No matter what, you never let the thatch go. It sounds beautiful in Irish, which I don't have.
So, Nell, what we're saying is, or what you're prepared to be saying is that, what we're saying is we're encouraging people to stand back and
think.
And give it some thought and not be persuaded unnecessarily to give up your house just because a bank wants to make some money out of you.
I just want to finish.
There has to be another solution.
There must be.
Okay, Nell, I'll go over to you to finish up on this.
The predictions from Seniors Money is that by 2007, now listen to this, that the uptake will be 150 million from Irish people. At the present, it's 50 million. Now, if that's not a bit of...
Well, as Joe rightly said, it's wrong that they can be allowed to do this. Mm. This is blackmail on the advertising campaign.
I hope, Brian, you'll take note of this and you'll make noises about this. I hope you'll do something about
this. I'm listening.
You know, it's very, very serious and it's very interesting. And you see, it's kind of insidious at the moment. It's silent and the advertising is very glossy. There's one up at the moment. This man is wheeling, has a wheelbarrow. Mm. And his car salesman comes along and he was... thinking about buying a car, so then he decides to take the silver one. I'll have the silver one. Well, of course, I have the money now and I can have this. Yeah. So I think we want to become very aware. I mean, you're going to make older people more insecure. And when you become older, unless you're, pretty well right there, you become very vulnerable. Particularly families can make you very vulnerable if you allow them.
Yes.
And, we all know ourselves about money.
Of course.
The commercial woodwork, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to finish on that. Thanks very much indeed to you all for your contribution on that. Can we go across now to Brian? Brian, you're local representative for the Socialist Party in Dublin North East, and you're talking on the privatisation of Aer Lingus.
I am, and I said I'd be quick,
so I
will try. I'm going to be...
You won't get away. We're debating everything good and proper.
No, I'm not running away from it. I'll burst through a lot of points here very quickly. It's a pity that Martin Brady couldn't stay to hear this, but he had to dash off. Happy birthday, Aer Lingus. They're 70 in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
And what our government decided to do on their birthday is sell them. I'll just read from our party paper, The Socialist, and then I'll go to a few points. It says in our April issue, Aer Lingus has been in existence for 70 years, providing relatively decent, permanent, pensionable jobs for tens of thousands of workers throughout its history, a net contributor to the exchequer. The government is now selling this company, built up by the workforce and working class people, and their taxes, and they're selling it for nothing. And the only reason that they can come up with to justify the sale is that the company needs investment to expand and buy more planes. Normally, if you sell something, you keep the money from the sale. But the proceeds of the sale of Aer Lingus are going to be ploughed straight back into the company, i.e. given back to the buyer. This is like saying that you have to sell your house because you want to buy a new suite of furniture. Only a lunatic would propose this. And let me just maybe clarify this point, that they're selling it for nothing. They're going to have an offering on the stock exchange, and this money is going to come in, and they're going to use that money then to buy some planes, which we're told they need. They're going to take in about 400 million, and I can't be accurate on that figure, but about 400 million. They need about 2 billion, but they'll bring in about one-fifth of that. That'll buy 2.5 planes. So the government are going to get nothing for the sale. Zero. And they're going to bring in money that's going to buy 2.5 planes. And these kind of deals are done over many years on leaseback. and we're going to sell off a 70-year-old state company that has returned a profit in the last 9 of 10 years. 9 out of the last 10 years. In the most difficult 10 years for trading for international airlines. 1% of the government's transport budget, if provided, would fund the deficit required that we're talking about, the 2 billion. They can, we've been told in the past they couldn't invest, they can invest. There is no block. The Irish government can invest in Aer Lingus. And just in case anybody is unsure about that, the Irish government can invest in Aer Lingus. They invest in Ryanair and other international airlines through the National Pension Plan. They subsidise Air Aran. Their National Pension Plan can and does invest in armaments and the tobacco industry, but they can't in their own national airline. It's not true.
And it's the second biggest, or second busiest airport in Europe.
Yes.
Now, don't tell me it's not a business proposition the government can handle without being embarrassed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So your point is very well made there. Can I throw that open for discussion?
I'll just quick 2 points and then I'll finish. Privatisation means outsourcing, redundancies, cuts in conditions and wages. Fianna Fáil have no mandate to sell Aer Lingus. They went to the people of North Dublin and Shannon and Cork and they never said that they would sell this. So why are they doing it? And I'll put it open to the panel.
Okay. Who'd like to come in on that?
Sure. Yeah, well,
Neil or Joe?
My feeling on this is very, very simple, very straightforward. You know, again, we're looking at, you know, if you take Aer Lingus, they've been through the hard times. They've come through the last couple of decades of hemorrhaging money and not actually making money. The company has turned itself around, presumably with the help of the workers. You know, they have been perhaps getting, pushing for as high a wages as they probably deserve because of the state that the company was in. But nonetheless, the company has turned around. They are in profit. Mm-hmm. Now, this smacks to me, again, of the ridiculous ideologies that the government has. We've been talking about the health situation, which is broken. We're talking about road safety, which is broken. And now we're talking about fixing something that isn't broken. Okay. And it baffles me. It goes beyond my understanding of how people think. Why would the government be focusing in on something that is now totally self-sufficient, earning a profit? If they want to buy new planes, if any business is making a profit, you can go to any bank and they will give you as much money as you want.
Exactly.
And what Brian has been saying makes simple economic sense. They're not going to get what they want by floating on the stock market to buy the planes that they need. Yes. They will get as many planes as they need by keep turning a profit.
Exactly.
And my point is this, why fix something if it isn't broke? There is enough things out there that are broken that need the time to be put into. Concentrate on those, not Aer Lingus. Leave it alone, it's doing very well.
Well done, well said, Joe. Nell?
Is it an Irish solution to an Irish problem?
Well,
I don't have the answer, yeah. But I can't imagine the thinking that's behind it.
Yeah.
Or the logic.
It's irrational,
isn't
it?
Any logic behind it?
None.
There isn't.
Okay, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'd like to thank you all for your contribution here today. And just before we go, a few phone calls in there. Are Irish society so dumb that they cannot realise how important road safety is without having to be educated first? Well, it's not so much the education, which Nell, you rightly pointed out about the education of people. But I think it's just the culture of society over 6 or 8 or 10 decades that we've got to recognise. Mm-hmm. Another comment from John Hutchinson on health. What more can the panel expect from Mary Harney when our Minister for Justice says inequality is a good thing? I rest my case. Okay, unfortunately, the clock has beaten us, so I'm going to say thanks to Nell Fitzpatrick, to Brian Green, to Joe Murphy, and indeed to our friend that came in at short notice. That's our local TD, Martin Brady. And we really appreciate the fact that he was going to a meeting but stopped by to have an input into the programme. And indeed, thanks also to our series producers, Andra Ball, and to Paul Loughran on sound. Paul, many thanks. And from me, Dermot Brangan, it's goodbye for now until next week's Between the Lines.
Majority World is Near FM's programme of social justice, global issues and all things multicultural. Join us between 4:30 and 5:30 every Thursday evening. Majority World.
Village, Ireland's new weekly current affairs magazine. On sale every Saturday and throughout the week. Edited by Vincent Brown. Politics, current affairs, the media, international issues, books, arts, pubs, clubs, restaurants, nature, buildings, churches and sports. Plus a special section, Villagers, open to the general public, as well as community, voluntary, political and other groups to express their views and opinions. It's a small world, but a big village. Village, Ireland's new weekly current affairs magazine, on sale every Saturday and throughout the week.
Local people talking godly on Northeast Access Radio.